Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Today, we have the most important voice of all, and that's the voice of the jurors. They have spoken. Donald J. Trump has been convicted of 34 counts of falsifying business records.
This was a rigged, disgraceful trial. The real verdict is going to be November 5th by the people, and they know what happened here, and everybody knows what happened here.
Guilty. In a historic verdict, former President Donald Trump's convicted on all 34 felony counts in a hush money election fraud criminal trial. Trump is now the first former president to be convicted of a felony and faces up to 4 years in prison. We'll get the latest. Then two more Biden administration officials resign in protest over the administration's support for the war on Gaza. We'll speak with Alex Smith, a contractor for USAID, who resigned this week after his presentation on maternal and child mortality among Palestinians was canceled. We'll also be joined by veteran State Department official Stacey Gilbert. She stepped down this week, citing disagreements with a recent State Department report that claimed Israel's not obstructing U.S. humanitarian assistance to Gaza. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Guilty. After 3 weeks of testimony and less than 12 hours of deliberation, a Manhattan jury has found former President Donald Trump guilty on all 34 felony charges of attempting to influence the 2016 presidential election by falsifying business records to cover up a hush money payment. Sentencing has been scheduled for July 11th, just 4 days ahead of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, is the first former U.S. president to be convicted of a felony. The maximum penalty is 4 years in prison, though Judge Juan Merchan could decline to send Trump to prison and instead impose a fine, probation, or supervision. Trump's expected to appeal. He spoke to reporters in the Manhattan courtroom after the verdict was announced.
This was a disgrace. This was a rigged trial by a conflicted judge who was corrupt. It's a rigged trial, a disgrace. They wouldn't give us a venue change. We were at 5% or 6% in this district, in this area. This was a rigged, disgraceful trial. The real verdict is going to be November 5th by the people. And they know what happened here, and everybody knows what happened here. You have a Soros-backed DA and the whole thing. We didn't do a thing wrong. I'm a very innocent man.
We'll have more on the historic conviction of Donald Trump after headlines. Israel continues its unabated attacks across the Gaza Strip. Overnight airstrikes on the Bereij refugee camp in central Deir al-Balah killed at least 11 people. Mourners grieve their loved ones at Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital.
What happened was we heard that there was a massacre in Bereij camp from the Al-Sus family. My daughter was there and her children. She is their daughter-in-law. The whole house was martyred. The Israelis bombed the house. Her husband, her children, her father-in-law, her mother-in-law, her sisters-in-law were killed. The whole family was killed. My darling, my daughter.
A separate attack in Nusayrat camp struck a car carrying a family that had been providing free meals for displaced people. In northern Gaza, Israeli troops say they've retreated from Jabalia after 3 weeks of utter destruction. Displaced Palestinians returned to their homes, which in many cases were no longer standing.
I was displaced to the camp on the coasts when the occupying forces came to the Jabalia camp. When we heard that they have withdrawn, we came back. When we came back to the Jabalia camp, we were shocked by the scenes of what has happened to it. Destruction. Homes have been completely razed to the ground, and what was not leveled to the ground was burned down, and what was not burned was completely destroyed.
Meanwhile, the charity Save the Children says Israeli strikes have killed at least 66 people, including many children, over a period of 4 days this week in areas of Rafah that were designated as safe zones. On Thursday, Hamas said it's ready for a complete agreement, including the exchange of hostages and prisoners, if Israel stops its war immediately. An Israeli negotiator dismissed the proposal as delusional. Israel's far-right finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, has threatened to turn the occupied West Bank, quote, into ruined cities like in the Gaza Strip. Smotrich, an advocate for illegal Israeli settlements, made the remarks in a social media video Thursday. On Thursday morning, Israeli forces stormed the West Bank city of Ramallah in another violent raid, igniting a devastating fire on a vegetable market. Dozens of stores were destroyed by the flames, causing vendors millions in damages as firefighters combated the blaze for hours. Humanitarian groups are condemning an Israeli bill to designate UNRWA as a terrorist organization. Doctors Without Borders called it, quote, an outrageous attack on humanitarian assistance and an act of collective punishment against the Palestinian people, unquote. The group added the bill, which is making its way through the Israeli Knesset, would, quote, amount to a free license to attack UNRWA facilities and its humanitarian personnel, unquote. The UN said this week aid to Gaza had dropped 67% since May 7th as Israel launched its invasion of Rafah. Yemen's Houthi movement said joint U.S.-British strikes killed 16 people and injured 40 others in Hodeidah province Thursday. The U.S. acknowledged launching 13 strikes against Houthi targets in Yemen as Houthi fighters have intensified attacks on freight vessels in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, including an attack earlier today on the U.S. Eisenhower aircraft carrier. The Houthi movement is vowing to continue its maritime strikes as long as Israel's war on Gaza is ongoing. Slovenia has become the latest European nation to recognize Palestinian statehood. The move still needs to be approved by the Slovenian parliament, which is expected in the coming days. A New York nurse launched a hunger strike outside the White House Thursday and is calling on all healthcare providers to oppose U.S. support for Israel's assault on Gaza. Jennifer Kooning said in a statement, quote, the immeasurable trauma that children in Gaza are experiencing is horrifying and completely unjustifiable. Children's brains and bodies are fragile and still growing, and they're being starved, bombed, and traumatized beyond belief. At this point, silence is complicity, she said. Earlier this week, 25 U.S. federal law clerks issued a rare public statement condemning, quote, our government's complicity in genocide, unquote. The statement was published anonymously, as judges and clerks are forbidden to engage in protest or other political activity. The law clerks wrote, quote, although the rules of the judiciary prevent us from publicly advocating at this time, we write this letter as a small gesture of our love and solidarity, unquote. President Biden's given Ukraine permission to defensively deploy U.S. weapons to strike targets inside Russia close to Ukraine's northeast Kharkiv region. The change in policy was widely reported Thursday, though the White House has yet to officially comment on the matter. The new directive does not apply to long-range missile strikes inside Russia. Earlier today, Germany confirmed it was allowing Ukraine to use German-supplied weapons in Russia's border area with Ukraine. Vladimir Putin this week warned of serious consequences if weapons provided by NATO members were used inside Russia. This comes as Ukrainian authorities announced at least 4 people were killed and another 16 injured in an overnight Russian attack in a residential area of Kharkiv, the second largest city. Large swaths of South Asia continue to grapple with a blistering heat wave and soaring temperatures that have reached over 125 degrees Fahrenheit. In India, at least 24 people died Thursday of suspected heat stroke in the eastern states of Bihar and Odisha. Meanwhile, many residents in Delhi are facing chronic water shortages. Warnings have been acted across India as hospitals are seeing a spike in patients suffering heat-related ailments. This is a doctor in New Delhi.
We have got about six patients who were critical and they had heat stroke-like symptoms, and two patients were having heat exertion symptoms. So some of the patients were drowsy and they needed ventilator, and some of the patients had convulsions also, and one patient came gasping also to the emergency department.
CBS News reports the Biden administration's planning to send groups of immigrants from Latin America to Greece and Italy as an effort to discourage more people from seeking refuge at the U.S.-Mexico border. Under the initiative, people who are first processed at U.S. immigration centers recently opened in Colombia, Costa Rica, Ecuador, and Guatemala could be resettled in Greece or Italy. The U.S. already has a similar resettlement partnership with Canada and Spain. And the U.S. Supreme Court has unanimously sided with the National Rifle Association, paving the way for a First Amendment lawsuit against a New York State official who encouraged businesses to cut ties with the firearms lobby. Maria Vullo, former superintendent of the New York State Department of Financial Services, had urged banks and insurance companies to stop working with the NRA following the 2018 mass shooting at a high school in Parkland, Florida. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. After 3 weeks of testimony and 2 days of deliberations, former President Donald Trump's hush money election fraud criminal trial ended Thursday with a historic verdict. This is Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg.
Today, we have the most important voice of all, and that's the voice of the jurors. They have spoken. Donald J. Trump has been convicted of 34 counts of falsifying business records.
Yes, former President Donald Trump has been found guilty of all 34 counts of falsifying business records to cover up payments made to Stormy Daniels in order to protect his 2016 presidential campaign. He's the first former president to be convicted of a felony and faces up to 4 years in prison, though Judge Juan Merchan could instead impose a fine, probation, or supervision. Trump's defense team said it plans to appeal. Merchan set Trump's sentencing date for July 11th, 4 days before the Republican National Convention, where Trump will become the party's official presidential nominee. At the courthouse in downtown Manhattan, Trump slammed the verdict as a disgrace.
The real verdict is going to be November 5th by the people.
Meanwhile, President Joe Biden's campaign said the verdict shows no one is above the law. Trump also faces three more criminal cases. We begin our coverage of Trump's historic conviction with Ron Kuby, criminal defense and civil rights lawyer based here in New York. Ron, welcome back to Democracy Now!. Your response.
Thank you. I was not surprised by the verdict. I was surprised that it came back as quickly as it did. Most of us who had been privately speculated that it would be late afternoon today, Friday, at the very earliest, if not next week. In thinking about it, you know, especially having the luxury of knowing what the verdict is, the prosecutor told this remarkably compelling story over a six-hour period. I mean, he could have cut it down a bit, but he started at the very beginning with the conspiracy, how it was formed, who was in the room, brought in all the witnesses, integrated every piece of evidence, responded to the defense arguments in the process, and finished and really gave the jury, you know, an entire script that they could follow if they chose to do so. And they did choose to do that. And since all of the charges stemmed from basically the same thing, Which was this falsification of business records for the purpose of concealing another crime. Once the jury found guilty on one count, it was very easy to find him guilty of all 34.
And, of course, you had those checks that President Trump signed with a Sharpie, famous nine of the checks that were sent to Michael Cohen. Now, the defense had argued that Michael Cohen was a thief and a liar, but the prosecution said, you know, we don't get to actually always choose the perfect witness. He's basically a tour guide through the documents, they described.
Well, I think the prosecution minimized his role somewhat. There were a couple of the only person who could directly tie Trump to full knowledge of the hush money payments was Michael Cohen. But there was this, you know, tsunami of circumstantial evidence tying Trump to causing these payments to be made and these false entries to be made. And the jury very much relied on that. And the defense never posed any sort of realistic counter-narrative. That is, okay, if this isn't would-be President Trump doing all in order to gain an election advantage by paying off a porn star and people not knowing, finding out about it. Just what is it? Just somehow explain it. And the defense never even came close to providing an alternative explanation.
So President Trump has become a felon. What does that mean even before the sentencing? And then what do you expect on July 11th?
Well, one thing it means is he cannot own a firearm. Now, okay, he can become commander-in-chief and, you know, declare nuclear war, but he cannot personally own a firearm. It doesn't really change much in terms of his legal liabilities and the like. Mostly what it does is he's now introduced as convicted felon Trump. He faces sentencing on July 11th, and while even if he is sentenced to prison time, which I do expect he will get some sort of carceral sentence, it will undoubtedly be stayed pending multiple appeals thanks to New York's very liberal bail laws, which the right wing usually attacks. But now I know somebody who's pretty happy that they exist on the
books.
And
so let's talk about what that means. July 11th, 4 days before the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. If he was sentenced even to a week, he would miss the convention if he was frog-marched out of the courthouse into jail.
That's right. But he would not be so frog-marched. He would receive a stay either from Judge Mershon or from an appellate judge until his appeal can be perfected. And there are many appeals after that. So I think it's important to realize that, yes, Judge Mershon, in my opinion, is likely to impose a jail sentence. But no one is going to hear the steel door slam shut behind him for a long time, pending various appeals.
Can he vote?
He can.
He can.
He can, because he is a New York, this is a New York conviction. And so right now, as of today, it could change. In Florida, Florida looks to New York's disenfranchisement law. So the only way he can't vote in Florida is if he is actually in prison in New York on Election Day.
And in future show, we're going to look at those voter rights around the country and what happens to not just prisoners, but people who are free. Maybe he could be sentenced to home arrest or whatever. But under probation and parole, what are people's rights? I mean, in Vermont, you can vote from prison. In other places, you can't vote for the rest of your life if you've ever gone to prison, if you've been convicted of a felony.
And it's something that probably has yet to fully dawn on Trump's legal team. Is he remains under the carceral control of Judge Mershon. He is a defendant out on release, pending sentencing, and ultimately pending appeal, but Mershon maintains control over him. So if he goes out and commits other crimes, for example, the judge can impose additional restrictions on him, or even do what the right wing has encouraged people to do with serial committers of crimes, lock him up.
You mentioned that President Trump can run for president as a felon and be president as a felon, but he can't own a firearm.
Right.
If he became president, could he change that law?
Well, Congress would actually have to change that law.
That's or executive order?
No, no. There's positive law prohibiting a felon from possessing a firearm.
And explain why he couldn't pardon himself if he were president.
The presidential pardon power applies to all offenses under federal law except treason and impeachment. It has no application to offenses committed under various state laws. The only person who can pardon President Trump in New York State is Governor Kathy Hochul.
So he could pardon himself in the federal documents case.
Yes.
He could pardon himself in the interference case,
yes.
Jack Smith's case, but not in the Georgia case that's upcoming under Fannie Willis, that DA, and not in this case.
Excellent.
Under Alvin Bragg.
You got it.
So talk about Alvin Bragg and the significance of what he did today. Grew up not so far from President Trump in Harlem, went to Harvard, Harvard Law School, came out, and some criticized him for not moving faster on Trump. Others said, of course, Trump himself, that he'd been after him from the beginning. In fact, he skips over Bragg and talks about Biden, that this is an unfair Biden circus. How is Alvin Bragg related?
Their last names both start with B. There's no relationship there. And Alvin Bragg's career trajectory is not a trajectory of a traditional politician or somebody interested in seeking higher office. He won district attorney as a criminal justice reformer. He's done some good work in that area. He's not a headline seeker in any fashion. He's always remained sort of out of the spotlight, relatively humble, not talking a lot about the cases. And I always thought this was a very solid case from the beginning. It wasn't the big grand case that Trump haters wanted, but it was a good, solid case based not on presidential abuse of power and presidential authority, but based really on a common, tawdry, dirty little grift.
Finally, summarize what he was found guilty of 34 times.
He was found guilty of 34 counts of falsification of business records for the purpose of concealing the commission of another crime. That is, every time they made a bookkeeping entry showing that Michael Cohen was being paid for legal services or signed a check for legal services, Trump knew and caused those entries to be fraudulent, and he did that for the purpose of concealing election law violations.
And that election law violation?
Well, that would be various either federal or state campaign contributions or conspiracy to affect the outcome of the 2016 election. You don't have to actually prove that he committed those crimes. You don't have to prove those crimes beyond a reasonable doubt. You just have to prove that the concealment was done in order to conceal the commission of those crimes. And let's face it, people don't cook their books just for fun. Usually when they cook their books, they're trying to cover up some other misdeed. There's well-established law about this. Usually in New York, the federal crime that they're committing is a Securities and Exchange Commission violation. Very common, regularly prosecuted, and something similar was charged here. It wasn't some way far out tenuous legal theory.
Well, we're going to talk about the significance of the first former president to be convicted as a felon in a moment. Ron Kuby, we want to thank you so much.
Thank you.
A criminal defense lawyer and civil rights attorney based here in New York. Next up, we'll speak more about what's next for Trump and his supporters with Professor Manisha Sinha, historian of U.S. politics, slavery, abolition, the legacy of the Civil War and Reconstruction. Back in 20 seconds.
I'm not going no small fret. Let me extend my apologies on a big fret with big flag going overhead like canopy. Yeah. Rag in my back pocket with a white vest, sneakers and wallabies. Knife tips and tight pants, I never really rate none of these. Yo. I come from Brass Festival and from Customs and from Flour Mills. What's a fed, fire fed and licensing fed and them had a power pill. Ooh. Everybody gone nice and groovy, bungee, all you pushing power still. What? If it's me, you don't leave me with power on a hill. I come here for no stand up. Hey, hey, hey. I come to party with my hand up. Hey, hey, yeah. So all all Soca people, for you two one in the year, you two one in the year, you two one in the year. I never come here for no stand up. I come to party with my hand up. All Soca people, for you two one in the year, you two one in the year, yeah, yeah, yeah. All Soca lovers do this. Show me your hand.
Hard Fact by Bungie Garland. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Former President Donald Trump will be sentenced July 11th, 4 days before the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, after a New York jury found him guilty Thursday on all 34 counts of falsifying business records to cover up payments made to Stormy Daniels in order to protect his 2016 presidential campaign. Trump's vow to appeal also faces three more criminal cases. For more, we're joined by Professor Manisha Sinha, historian of U.S. politics, slavery, abolition, legacy of Civil War and Reconstruction, professor at the University of Connecticut and author of several books, including The Rise and Fall of the Second American Republic, Reconstruction, 1860 to 1920. Professor, you last joined us on the day after the January 6th insurrection. Welcome back to Democracy Now! First, respond to this historic moment in U.S. history, not just U.S. politics, the first former president to become a felon.
Thank you for having me, Amy. Yes, it is extremely unprecedented because we have never had a case in United States history when a former president has been not only impeached twice, but also is now a convicted felon. Of course, there have been instances of corruption amongst presidents and vice presidents, but mostly they have resigned before they could be convicted and they have been pardoned. What's unusual about Trump's case is that the extent of the criminality, the various cases against him, and now this unanimous jury decision convicting him for falsifying business records, but also, most importantly, for trying to corrupt the 2016 elections. All this is unprecedented in the history of American republicanism. As so much that concerns Trump, he wears this as honor. He seems unrepentant, even in the face of all these convictions. So, yes, I think we are, in fact, at a crossroads in the history of American republicanism. And a man like Trump could very much upend this over 200-year historical experiment in representative government.
So it's not clear what will happen July 11th, except that he will be sentenced by Judge Merchan. He could sentence him to up to 4 years in prison. It's highly unlikely he would do that. He could sentence him to house arrest. He could be out on probation. But if you can talk about this political significance of right before the Republican convention, what this means, you have a president now, a presidential candidate, who represents a lot of firsts in U.S. history. The first form criminally tried, convicted, impeached twice. Talk about his legacy and what this means as the Republican frontrunner.
Yes, I think one of the most dangerous things about Trump is that he's not a one-man show. He is the presumptive nominee of a political party in a two-party system. That in itself poses an immense danger, I think, to American democracy. He's also now a convicted felon, as you mentioned. It's a Class E felony. He may not go to prison, but he's in the same category as those people who do carjackings or those who are accused of aggravated domestic assault. Now, this is a category of criminality that he is a part of. And I cannot help but think that any right-thinking American citizen Even a moderate Republican would have to think about that. I don't think that this conviction, as many have argued, will actually increase his support. Those minority that supported him will always support him because there have been so many acts of criminality and wrongdoing that has preceded this. I do think, though, that this will make an enormous difference to moderates, independents, will make them think twice. Do they want to actually vote for a felon, especially a party that pretends to stand for law and order?
So we spoke to you the day after the January 6th insurrection in 2021, Professor Sinha. In fact, you were among the historians included in one of the biggest briefs in Trump versus Colorado. Your work was also quoted. Can you talk about this case in the context of your new book, which focuses on the Reconstruction era and when the 14th Amendment was ratified, and explain it all?
Yes, you know, I, as a historian, really do feel